Welcome to Built Brave. Driven women sharing their stories to show others what is possible for them. Because we were all born brave. I'm your host, Lo Wentworth, and this is Built Brave. Are you ready? Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. So I'm excited to have today's guest on, Sarah. So Sarah, can you take it away and let the audience know who you are and what you're about?
Yes. So my name is Sarah, and I am an East Coast-based fashion blogger with a focus on domestic violence awareness. I lost my mom to domestic violence at age 6 and started a company in her honor where I can advocate for raising awareness about domestic abuse, and we donate 25% of our proceeds to a different charity each month.
So how has losing your mom at such a young age to domestic violence shaped your like view of the world?
That's such a good question. I feel like I look at life definitely a lot differently than some of my friends who maybe didn't experience such an intense loss at a young age. I feel like I think a lot of things are like more trivial, and I don't really feel like there's a lot of things that, you know, are worth putting so much energy and negative energy in and things that are, you know, drama based. It kind of just made me realize the things that are truly important in this world and what problems to really stress about, if that makes sense.
Oh, that makes totally sense.
Yeah.
So, for me, my father developed fibromyalgia when I was 8. So he's had that since then. So it's very much interesting when you go through those little traumas at a young age where it's kind of like gossiping. I could care less.
Yeah, I know. Just, exactly. So you get it too. It's like that same, the little things don't really matter as much as people think that they do.
Yeah, I remember like being in high school and stuff and them just gossiping and getting upset about some trivial thing, some ridiculous thing. And I'd be like, really? That's what, okay, that's kind of dumb in my eyes because, you know, real world stuff has happened. And I'm kind of like, that's not, okay, you do you. So that's interesting. It's nice to find a kindred spirit like that because it's like.
Yes, I love people who are on the same page.
Even to this day for a while, like with my parents, they'd tell me some things that were going on, like in college with my former classmates, and I'd be like, okay, cool. Can we talk about something else? I know we're having a conversation. It's just the nature of things, but I'm like,
we're all doing our own thing. I have been there. I feel the exact same way.
Okay. So how have you noticed yourself working through like hardships? We'll say like starting your own business and going through that and like the mindset and how that has played a role because you lost your mom at such a young age?
So a lot of my mindset is just based around like spirituality. I've been really trying to educate myself more spiritually. You know, the longer I do my business. So before I started Angel Energy a year or so ago, it wasn't something I ever tuned into, but now running a business and being in tune with my spirituality, I feel that, you know, life and death, it isn't as final and as black and white as we see it. So I use spirituality to feel connected to my mom. And that in turn helps me to get through anything that I'm trying to accomplish with my business, just because I feel like I truly, my company's called Angel Energy, but I truly feel like I do have that angel energy from her, you know, with me still. And that has shaped my mindset tremendously.
That's interesting because, you know, a lot of people have abandoned religion and gone to spirituality, but they're really just essentially the same thing.
Yes.
Disguised under a different name.
Exactly. So. I feel the same way. And it's never something that I really thought about, like getting in tune with. And it's so insane now how it just plays such a big part in my life. And like you were saying, I mean, people have the perception that spirituality is like, you know, anti-religion, when really it's just believing in a higher power. It's all of the religions, really.
Mm-hmm. It's just how you viewpoint it. It's like the same of, you know, with the I am statements. Like, what are you saying? Like, are you saying I am not good enough? Or are you saying I am good enough? Those are different things, yes. But you're still putting that energy into the world. One's more positive than the other, but that's different from what we're talking about. Anyways, that's interesting. Did you find spirituality at such a young age, or has that been more of a new phenomenon for you?
Definitely new. So it's so crazy where I am now versus like when everything first happened with my mom 21 years ago. It's taken me really the whole 21 years to get here. And a lot of these concepts are new, and it took me starting my business to really find an interest in them. So my whole life, I really didn't feel connected to my mom until, you know, the past couple of years, because I kept it so suppressed and, you know, not tuning into my spirituality, I think really hindered my healing, whether I realized at the time or not. So the past, you know, few years, really having that become a part of my world has just changed everything. And it's something that I wish I found earlier in life, because I think it would just help me with the grieving process. And it's something that I, you know, suggest to others who are going through a loss of some type, or even just in general, when you feel lost, it just, I don't know, it just has helped me to feel whole, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I think in a sense, like spirituality and diving into that, it's like when people feel the most disconnected. And it's because they're really just disconnected from themselves. And it's just finding tools to get back to that connection.
And everyone has those tools, you know, innate in them. It's just deciding that you want to find those tools to, you know, use them.
Right. There's no quick fixes.
Nope. No quick fixes.
It's not like the Matrix where you take the red pill or the blue pill.
Right.
You gotta.
That would be nice if there was that.
Yes. So then what caused you to decide to start your own business, Angel Energy?
It's another thing that's so crazy that it kind of all came about, because it was never something that I had intended to do with my life. So I graduated from Monmouth University in May of 2014 with my bachelor's degree in PR, but I weirdly ended up doing accounting and finance recruiting. Like, it was just one of those jobs that I fell into. And then, you know, 4+ years in, I'm like, what am I really doing with my life? Like, I'm not feeling fulfilled doing this. This isn't what I even went to school for. You know, my passion's always been for fashion and creativity. And obviously the domestic violence aspect of it is just a part of me because of how I lost my mom. So none of those things were being, I wasn't able to express myself with any of those. And it was the summer of 2018. So it was 2 years ago that I just decided I needed a creative outlet. And through that, I started my fashion blog as just a hobby. And it was helping me to have that space where I could be creative that I was lacking at work. And after starting my blog and kind of growing a social media following, I felt like it was time to just share my story, because I was sharing so many other aspects of my life. And so I shared my story in January 2019. And I actually hadn't like told anyone my story ever. A lot of my friends from college even didn't know what had happened. But I felt like in order for, you know, the world to know me online, I really have to be me. And from that, the response that I got was just incredible, of people who could relate. And it made me realize how I really wasn't that alone. And that's what triggered me to start Angel Energy. At the time, I quit my job at the end of February 2019 with the idea I wanted to create some type of business to combine fashion and domestic violence awareness, but I didn't know exactly what that would be. So I figured it out as I went, and Angel Energy kind of formed from that.
Isn't it interesting how that is, where you just like, I don't know, I know these two things, I meant to put these two things together, but I have no clue what that looks like. And
yes,
how like the universe just won. Go ahead.
Yeah, when something is so opposite, like fashion and domestic violence are like polar opposite things. So it was hard to kind of like, how do you, things that are so different, how do you make that into one? But I think if it's something that you're truly passionate about and something that, you know, makes you you, I think it will just come naturally, even if they are completely opposite things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everything's connected. They may look like they're different, but they're all like, there's some like connection, like with the politics going on and political beliefs. I'm kind of like, well, why can't you apply the same tools you learn in personal development to political beliefs because they're the same thing. They're just beliefs in a different category.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I want to back up a little bit and talk about when you shared your story with your social media following. That's a huge vulnerability step. Can you walk someone through who is like teetering about using their voice and sharing their story and what that looked like for you?
Yes. So I would suggest for anybody that is looking to share their story to not just go from like 0 to 100 up until I shared my story. So it's not something that I talked about in college. No one knew about it, but I guess it's about a year leading up to me sharing it. I slowly, like one by one, started just telling from my closest friends, and that helped me to get a little bit more comfortable. So by the time I shared it, maybe like a dozen people had known, but practicing a little bit and starting small helps to kind of ease the stress and anxiety that comes with being so vulnerable and putting yourself out there. And you know, knowing that you have a strong support system before doing that is helpful too. So, you know, making sure that you have those few people that you can confide in and that, you know, support you regardless, because then it doesn't matter like what anyone thinks. And it's of course always scary to be vulnerable, but you know, if you feel supported and you feel confident, there's nothing to be scared of. It's just, I think, ease yourself into it would be my biggest like tip for it. And then especially if you decide to, you know, share your story publicly and take it to another level and like speak publicly, you really should just, you know, take the steps slowly just so you don't overwhelm yourself to getting there.
I think that's something very key when someone's sharing something that's so like deeply rooted that they've had inside for years, is to like slowly chip away at that armor, because the vulnerability hangover could be massive. And sometimes that's even worse than going through the things and keep chipping away at that armor. Yeah. So what did it look like when you shared your story? Did you do it on like a video? Did you say a blog? Like what was that?
So I wrote a blog post. I've always loved writing, and like most people who write, sometimes you just get these bursts of creativity and you just have to write when it comes to you. And other times you can just stare at the blank Word document and can't think of what to write. So the morning that I wrote my story, it was just a morning that I felt really inspired. And I just, it's so bad looking at it now, because I actually wrote it when I was at work recruiting. Like I wasn't really doing my job. I was like in my cubicle writing my story, but I ended up leaving shortly after, so it's fine. But I got that first and I had to just act on it. And it was just written. It wasn't a video or anything the first time when I just told my story. And it was just really what I felt. And I put just my heart out there. And I think that people were able to connect to it just because it was just so real and raw. And, you know, after that, I've done videos and things like that, public speaking at schools or events, and like I said, ease my way into it. But that was like the very first time, was just this like long blog post about it.
That's interesting. I've also noticed, at least for me, maybe you could relate, is before I used my actual voice, it was the written word that just felt like the safest and easiest for me to do it and put it out there, kind of just like put it out into the ether and be like, okay, I'm done with it and move on.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And I remember too, like when I wrote it in the beginning of the day, and I think I posted it like right when I left work. So it was like, I just had to get out of there. I didn't want to be around anyone, because like you said, put the words down, and then just like, I had to like close my phone for a little bit and just like not, you know, look at it and not stress out what people were going to think. But it was a lot easier to put it in writing first than to speak it and be in front of people, you know, just sharing it like that.
And what was your response from it?
So there were so many people, like, I think that's not funny, but like the craziest part is just that no one from my college knew. So like so many people who I was friends with in Greek life and just all throughout, you know, my life were just so like, couldn't process that had happened to me, because what a lot of people would always say is, you know, Sarah, you're so normal. You know, I never thought that would happen. You're an optimistic person. So just a lot of people who didn't know, reaching out, like completely, you know, taken back by it. That was like a big thing for me. And then I think just the most important thing was those people who actually could relate reaching out, and people who I didn't know reaching out, who said, you know, this happened to someone I know, or I grew up in a house like that too. And there was just so many similar stories that I received as responses that like made me really want to take this to the next level.
Mm-hmm. To me, it sounds like you found an avenue where you didn't want other people to feel as alone and isolated as you felt.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And then it's also a lesson to show like the people who are the most put together, you don't actually know what scars and battle wounds they have.
Exactly. And that's why I thought too, like, I just feel like everything, you know, happens for a reason. And for whatever reason, this was supposed to happen to my family and me. And I think because I am somebody who can stand up and, you know, share my voice for those who are scared to use their voice. And like you said, you know, when from the outside looking in, that's how everyone perceived me my whole life. Like no one even knew what happened. They just thought that I was like just a regular person. And I think that too is a good example of anybody is really able to rise above whatever circumstances they're born into. And it can be as extreme as, you know, having your mother murdered, or it could be something, you know, not as intense, but regardless of whatever it is, we all have that ability to rise above it. And I think a lot of people like to use what happened to them as an excuse for their actions. And that's always something that has really bothered me, because I've never done that. And I still never do that. And that's kind of what I also just want, you know, people to realize who are in a dark spot, maybe like you don't have to be in a dark spot. You really can rise above it.
Mm-hmm. It's like how I say, it's like you have a past and you're not your past. So what happened in your past doesn't mean it's going to repeat in the future, as long as you learn from it. And I think also like with your story, like people not realizing it, it's because you didn't fit the archetype. Like you said, you didn't go into the victimhood mentality about, well, you know, my mom was murdered because of domestic violence. I could have the excuse of being a complete asshole the rest of my life. And yeah, still and be justified.
And that was why I feared speaking my truth for so long, because I didn't want people to ever look at me as a victim. Because truthfully, as horrible as things were, I don't feel like a victim. I feel like I had a really great life, and I don't feel that, you know, people should feel bad for me. And I think it's just, I think it's a lot of self-awareness people need to tap into and just put their best foot forward.
Mm-hmm. So shifting into the domestic violence and your advocacy, what has been like the number one question someone has asked you, or number one theme of topic that someone who hasn't been touched by it comes in and wants to learn and grow from?
I would say probably just the question of like, what are the signs to look for, especially mm-hmm. if it's not you that's being affected. So for me, it's not that I personally was in an intimate relationship that was abusive, but I was, you know, a product of it. And there's things that we as, I guess you could say like allies for people who are in abusive relationships can do. And I think a big part is just not everything is as it seems and as it's perceived. A lot of people may give up on friends or family members that maybe are isolating themselves, and isolation is like a huge thing that abusers do to their victims. They do isolate them, and if someone's pulling away, and people might take that as they're not being a good friend, but really, you know, they need you more than ever. And like just overall, having patience with these people too, because I think the other misconception is that, you know, why aren't these people just leaving these relationships, like just leave, you know, and people get frustrated. And even myself, like I, for so long before I really started to educate myself more about domestic violence, like more my childhood, I would just be like, how did this happen? Like, I know my mom's so smart. Like I just didn't understand, like, why didn't she leave before then? Or like, how does somebody so intelligent let something get to that point? And you know, it's not like a quick switch. It's there's so much more that goes into it. So I think just having patience too for these people, having patience and just not giving up on them are like important things to do, and the signs to look for, like isolation and you know, if someone's just really separating themselves. I would say is like the best thing to pay close attention to and to just still be there for those people.
Mm-hmm. Cause they're still wanting someone to like rely on and like a safe space, so to say, to like come to that will be there when eventually and hopefully they get out of it and doesn't go to the, take a tragic turn. I know when I was in law school, I took the domestic violence class that they had, and a lot of it was just they feel so powerless.
Yeah.
And I even had a client, so who I was representing, that was like on a scale of domestic abuse, if it was like 1 to 10, it was a 25. It had been going on for so many years and so many different ways. And this woman, you can tell like mentally how traumatizing and horrific it was on her. But I knew my number one job was to remind her that she had the power, even though she was going through the divorce and getting all that she can to protect herself, that she still felt powerless.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I feel like that is like the number one thing that abusers try to make their victims feel, just like no power, no like confidence. It's like they kind of just take everything out of the person that, you know, normally would be things that would help you to persevere through something. It's like you lose yourself, so it's hard to, like you said, you know, step into your power when you lost yourself.
Mm-hmm. Especially in that situation with like the attorneys there representing you, but you're the one that has to make all of the decisions. So when they're not used to doing that, then it's kind of like extra patience needs to be adhered to and the unwinding of things. So how have you noticed your growth since you, we'll just call this like your awakening again, like uncovering this and using your voice since then? So from there to now.
I've just, it's another thing. It's like, you know, you don't expect to change so much as a person starting something. And the growth, it's such like a healing process for me. So, you know, even just using my voice to tell my story over and over slowly heals me more and more internally. And I've grown from a healing perspective with that. And I guess just like overall with coming just into my, like growing into who I want to be as a person more, I feel like I don't know. I just feel like I have this like, I don't even know like the right words to describe it, but I have this new sense of purpose that's like even greater than I thought it was before. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, and I also feel like the more I grow within my company, I realize how much more there is to do and that I can do. So when I, for example, initially started the company, I was like, I want to donate to a different charity across the country each month. And it wasn't until the pandemic where I thought to myself, you know, why did I limit this to being just nationally and not internationally when this is such a worldwide problem? And just things like that, I think I'm coming into realizing my purpose more and more, and that it's a lot bigger than I even had imagined it would be. And to follow through on those things that will make it bigger, because I truly believe that I do, like you said, the power within you. I feel like I do have the power to do that. So just realizing that more and more, and realizing that my goals are bigger as I grow, they're bigger, and what I think is possible is bigger.
Yeah, to me, it sounds like you're more grounded as a person and then grounded in like what your mission is and what you're here to do and want to do with this life.
Yeah, that's definitely a easier way to sum it up, but yes, I couldn't think of the words, but
It's okay. Sometimes you got to process out loud. It's like where it's where I'm like, okay, I just need to say this out loud. And I even tell people, and like, sometimes I'll be in the middle of like telling you something that's bothering me, and internally I'll like hear myself and I'll be like, well, that's dumb. And I'll just stop it and move on. So it's kind of like leaving someone on a cliffhanger. It's like, whatever. It's done. I don't care. I don't need to talk about this anymore. It's fine. I moved on. It got out of my head. So with growing your business in particularly, what has been your biggest surprise?
Biggest surprise? I would say it sounds like something that would be a given, but the community that has been formed ever since creating my business, that was a big surprise to me. I knew that obviously, you know, after I shared my story and there's people who could relate, but there was a community of people who had been through something similar, but kind of taking that to the next level and really finding specific people who I've either spoken on a panel with or, you know, have come across in some way or the other who can relate. Those relationships have helped me to grow. And that's something that I didn't realize would be such a factor of, you know, the community of survivors and other advocates, their impact on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, networking is really big. Building those relationships.
And I guess, another thing too, I'm kind of just thinking on the spot because this actually was advice from somebody that I met along the way. So the very first time I did public speak at a school, it was the first time I shared my story publicly. And this was in October of 2019. And I don't know, I guess there was about 100 or so people. And afterwards, I felt good about it, but I really had that vulnerability hangover. Like you said, you know, that's a thing. And I didn't realize that was a thing. And one of the women who I met on the panel, who has become a good friend, you know, she's spoken before and she kind of coached me through that of this is something that's always going to happen. Like no matter how many years you're public speaking, you're always going to have a little bit of a vulnerability hangover, but it's kind of how you learn to cope with that and how you learn to, you know, not let your vulnerability get into like your energy and to kind of put up a little, you know, bubble around yourself when you are speaking and to you know, give yourself that time to kind of unwind after. Mm-hmm. So those are things I never even realized existed, or I didn't realize I would have those emotions. And that's something that's been a pretty big thing and learning to manage that, because it is something I talk about a lot. So I have to figure out how to not let it take a lot out of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, human emotions and, you know, people who are empathic and can take on like energy and all of that is, I mean, it fascinates me because it's quite interesting. But it's again, like, even say you did get hit by a massive vulnerability hangover, then it's followed up by like, don't judge yourself and just take care of what yourself. Those are one of those like crucial self-care moments where you're like, okay, I'm going to have to say, bye world. I'm an introvert. So I'm like, okay, bye world for the day. I'm going to do whatever I need.
You really have to put yourself first when it comes to your mental health and self-care in that way. And that's exactly what I did. After the first speech, I thought I was going to be ready to like party, like let's get a drink. You know, I was so stressed out about it before. I was like, I just can't wait until it's done, you know. And afterwards, all I wanted to do was just like lay in my room. I was sad. It brought up a lot of emotions telling that story. And I just felt just a really overwhelming sadness. And it was important for me to kind of take that night and not do what I planned. I thought I would want to, you know, have fun and be around friends and celebrate that I gave the speech and instead take time for myself to, you know, make sure that I'm okay from it. And now I know, you know, ever since then, when I do speeches, I'm probably not going to want to do something crazy after. I might just need that time to kind of unwind and process my emotions.
Mm-hmm. And intuition is such a powerful thing. So like bringing in your spirituality, were you intuitive when you were younger, when you're, I'd say like blissfully unaware to now where you're just aware of your intuition?
So that's really interesting. No one's ever asked me before. I would say I always was intuitive my whole life, but in a different way. I think I was like surface level intuitive, if that like makes any sense, but I was to an extent of, you know, just intuition with regular things of like something didn't feel right and just kind of trusting my gut, or something did feel right and trusting that. But with angel energy, it's like this new level of intuitiveness with just the direction of my life. So kind of like bigger things now, I'm like using my intuition for, but I've definitely been someone who's always just been like really in tune with my emotions, really socially aware, and really just, you know, intuitive overall. But now with the spirituality aspect, it just helps to, you know, vibrate at a higher level, I guess.
So someone who's just like getting tapped into their intuition, and I call it my inner knowing. It's just something I've always associated with.
Oh, I love that term.
With.
Yeah.
But to the outside world, it's like intuition. How do you maintain that connection, and how did you start building that connection for someone who's like new and learning?
I would say like read some books on kind of getting in tune with your spirituality. I think everybody has that intuition in them. The very first spiritual book that I read, and I think is just such an amazing book for anyone, it's called The Journey Home by Lee Carroll. And it's this story of, well, I don't want to give too much away, but basically, you know, this person goes on a journey where they really are able to tap into their intuition. And I think that the book teaches a lot of important concepts about trusting yourself. And that helped me, I think, to realize, you know, I'm not crazy for thinking I feel a certain way inside, that's a real true feeling that I need to act on. And, you know, books that help you to kind of decipher that, I think, is like a really good step for someone that hasn't tapped into that, because I think that it will just give you the ability to, it will just like open your mind to show you that it is possible. Everyone has it in them.
Then how did you start? I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Like with my intuition and all of that. So it's kind of like a crazy story of like what actually prompted me to start my blog, aside from like the creative outlet part. I was in just like, this was the summer of 2018, and I was in a really just like a, I guess, confused place in life. It's before I started the blog, before I quit my job. So I wasn't happy. I wasn't fulfilled. And although it seems really obvious now, I didn't know why at the time. So I actually went to a medium, and this is like what just prompted all of my interest in spirituality. So I went to a medium, and I think a lot of people, when they hear the word medium, they like get freaked out sometimes, and they think of, you know, oh, like a fortune teller, and like, tell me what's going to happen to me, something bad. And really it's not that, at least like any of the mediums that I've gone to, it's more so just, I guess, you know, understanding the concept of free will, and that, you know, there are different avenues in front of you that you can take, but you have the choice to make that decision and to take them or not. And through that reading, my mom came through, and it was just so incredible. And I think that too, just because I have this strong connection, like with my mom who isn't here, has just given me the confidence to like tap into my intuition more and to believe myself when I like think certain things or feel a certain way. But that was like really the trigger that opened my mind to just that whole concept of like of free will and trusting yourself and following your purpose and all of that. And then like from there, I think my interest just grew, and I saw a medium a couple more times throughout the next like 2 years, and books and podcasts and just things. Like I feel like once you're interested in something, you'll want to keep like educating yourself on it. And that's kind of like how it all came about for me, but it was originally like triggered from that time with that medium before I started my blog, and then it's just picked up.
It's interesting how the things that seem like they wouldn't have the causal effect or that igniting force, and then they are the things that do that.
Yeah. It's the things you wouldn't expect. It's so interesting too, because like when you ask me these questions, I really have to think back, like what did trigger that to happen? And it really is something so small, and a tiny event can make a big difference.
That is true. That is very true. Even like looking back, I don't know if I shared this with you or not, because I've been having other prep calls, and I was just like, part of the whole reason I started doing this was because in law school, first semester, after midterms, there were a bunch of women in the bathroom, and there one just had the courage to ask like if we were crying all the time, because law school's no joke. And it was like the bathroom took its first collective breath ever, and then it was popcorn, like, oh my god, me too. And I'm sitting here and being like, this is messed up.
Yeah.
It's messed up in the sense that it took so long for someone to say that, but it's messed up in the fact that like we had those internal barriers, you know, like talking about the strong ones and the people who seem like they didn't have tragic things happen to them, and then they share their story, and then it just blows up your whole concept of who they are.
Exactly. Yeah, that's amazing. That's a powerful moment in that bathroom.
But you wouldn't have thought at the time that it would trigger be a long trigger of all of this. It's kind of just interesting how that stacks up and you know, actually viewing how like life is happening for you, not to you.
Yes. Yes. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Cause then it's easier, at least for me, it's easier to find meaning instead of being like getting really angry. Cause my home base growing up is just anger was so much easier to express versus anything else. And then being like, switching that perspective and going like, okay, what is the lesson here? What am I supposed to learn from this? I'm not saying this is the automatic thing that happens, but I try to have that happen more often than not because I am.
Yeah. Human. Yeah. And that's important too, to like learn the lesson from it. And because I think that whatever people believe, but I believe, you know, God gives you the same challenge over and over in different forms until you really do learn that lesson.
It's called a universal lesson. At least to me, it's keeps like, you know, the new level, new devil or same devil, whatever.
Yes.
To me, it's the same devil because it's like, okay,
yeah,
cool. I thought I slayed this dragon, but apparently not.
Like not quite. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, everyone experiences that in their own way. Every single one of us.
So what has been, I guess, your biggest struggle or the reoccurring theme that comes up for you, like that dragon that you keep having to slay, or you're kind of just like, seriously, again, universe, God, whatever.
I guess it would probably be kind of back to, what we were saying with the like vulnerability aspect of it. It's crazy because what I'm doing is something that I feared for so long to do and to talk about. And, you know, that's like, it's a reoccurring battle for me to go through this healing process as I am advocating for others. And, I know that I'll probably never fully heal. Like there's always going to be a void in me for my mom, and but kind of navigating that and you know, that battle of how do I really get over this so I can help the greater good? Like how do I, you know, minimize my vulnerability hangovers or my emotions? How do I not let that take over me? Because it's easy to go down like a dark path when you're talking about something dark and to, you know, brings up a lot. So like finding that balance and not letting it take so much from me. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's certain situations, like I was saying with like public speaking, where, you know, you have to take some time for yourself after, but more so, I guess I'm referring to like the everyday, like just rising above it, truly rising above it, not just, you know, saying it and being an advocate for it, but like living it too. And I would say that's probably something that, you know, I'll always have to really deal with. And I do think it's manageable. I think it's just, you have to get there and you have to, you know, do the work internally to become more at peace with things.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just like, I mean, you and I are similar in the whole like vulnerability piece, because it's really challenging since it's like you put up this armor when you were young and had to be really self-reliant because you didn't have the same things everyone else had, essentially. And just working on that every day. It's just, sometimes it gets like, for me, sometimes it gets frustrating when someone's like, you just need to be more vulnerable. And I'm sitting here and I'm like one, that makes me not want to. Two, I'm going like, well, are you wanting me to be blood guts on the floor? Because vulnerability it's a spectrum. It is a spectrum. Exactly. I'm vulnerable. Like when I would go out and eat and being like, no dairy, please, because I can't process, lactose. Like that's vulnerability. Yeah. And I don't necessarily want to be blood guts on the floor all the time either. So I don't know what you're expecting of me. So it's kind of like keeping your expectations in check.
Yes.
But yeah, you brought up something very interesting when you said like you're working through this and you just, even though you feel like, you know, you're never going to be able to fill that void of losing your mom and growing up with your mom. And I find that very interesting because I've had like a similar thought a while, like people are just, I don't want to say broken, but they're never really going to be ever whole.
Yeah.
I mean, you can strive to work towards that, but it's also understanding like the humanness is coming in. You're never going to be whole and complete. Maybe that happens when you die. I don't know. I haven't experienced it, and hopefully for not for a long time, but I guess for like right now, it's kind of like, I don't think anyone ever becomes whole.
I think it's, I agree. And I think life is kind of learning how to live, you know, not completely whole, how to make yourself feel whole when you aren't completely. And for me, it's been, you know, as I get older, I'm 28 now, it's been the idea of letting go of always feeling like, you know, I need a mom, and to kind of, you know, I'm going to be a mom, not yet. Like I'm not having a baby or anything, but that's going to be like the next step in my life. And although I'll never feel whole because I don't have my mom, I think when I'm a mom, I'll feel more whole, if that makes sense. Like it will help to, and I think that's the best that you can do. Like you said, like no one's ever going to be completely whole. But I think it's like getting to different levels within our own lives of our perception of what whole is to feel at peace.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also like a lot of power in defining things for yourself instead of like accepting them as is. It creates like, you know, that groundedness and confidence in whatever you're doing and like what you've exhibited with creating Energy Angel and being like, well, I don't know how the hell this is going to work out, but it's going to work out somehow.
Yes.
So what is like one piece of like advice or tip or whatever for someone who is experiencing trauma or had experienced trauma rather, but's wanting to vocalize it? What would you like give them, or what would you give your younger self when she was starting and wanting to be like, hey, this happened to me. Here you go.
So I think that writing is really powerful. And even if it's something as simple as journaling on your own before you're ready to take that step and to make something public knowledge, I think that putting things on paper, whether that's digitally or, you know, actually like a pen and paper, helps to sort out your emotions and helps to kind of process things before you're ready to take the next step and maybe publicly talk about it. So like journaling, just how you're feeling, or, you know, just your emotions overall. The act of writing is super therapeutic, and I think a really important step in being able to use your voice. Like we were talking about before, you know, writing is a little bit, not easier, but it's easier to show up writing than it is to show up just like in person or on video, especially if you're not comfortable yet. So just like even writing to yourself, like there's a lot of like, I've always loved to write, and I've always like had a journal, and just even there's times where I just get a burst of inspiration. I pull up the notes on my phone and I just start like writing something. And I think that that's really important. And I think that that is a great first step for anyone that wants to vocalize their trauma.
Well, it's also acknowledging it with yourself first. You can't really speak something until you've taken ownership, in the sense that, yes, something shitty happened to me. It caused these feelings in me, and that those are my own, and it's not like living there. So it's kind of being like taking the acknowledgement of like, this is part of my story and my story. But again, it's not entirely who I am. Just like you have a past, you're not your past.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So what has it been like your biggest challenge navigating growing up without a mom?
Like the biggest challenge of it all?
Yep, of it all. Like not having your mom there, and how you've like, have you taken out like solve more female role models in your life, or have you like, what has that looked like? And essentially you had to mother yourself in a way.
Yeah. So I feel like I have had multiple like mother figures in my life. Growing up, both of my grandmothers, so that's who raised me. I'm an only child, and after everything happened, I went back and forth between two sets of grandparents, and my mom's parents ended up getting custody over me, and I would still see my dad's parents all the time too. So both of my grandmothers they're completely different from each other. One is like SpongeBob's grandma, like really like, you know, like just like a typical like jolly, you know, grandma that would give me like that mothering feeling. And my other grandma, you know, she was great with just like values and other things that she kind of instilled in me. But a big part of it, and it kind of sounds silly, but I feel like the biggest like mother figure is my best friend, Kim, and she's only a couple months older than me, but we became best friends when we were 10 years old and we're still best friends to this day. We went to college together, have all the same friends from college, and she is just an amazing person. And she really has been a great support system always. I feel like she always kind of helped to keep me on track. Like I am definitely more of the free spirit type. So I feel like she's always like, I bring out the fun in her, and I feel like she brings out the, you know, the serious in me, and together, it's completely shaped my life. Like I owe so much of it to her and to my family and my mom's sister as well. My aunt Beth, she's like a great role model for me as well. And somebody that I, you know, can talk to about things. So I think, you know, everyone, no matter who it is that like you lose in life, I think there are people that can work together to kind of become that one person. And that's kind of how everyone's been, like a little bit of everyone has shaped who I am.
That reminds me of like the Council of Dads, the TV show that I was on, except it was, you had your own like Council of Moms. Exactly. Yeah. So they didn't renew it. And it's really it's based on a book, but it's based on the premise, like this dad, he gets cancer and then he eventually passes away from cancer. But how he sets it up is like, there's these three men who's like his core friends group, who are like, can you just for like a year be the Council of Dads as they shift out of this? And it's like each one of them had their own little similar.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's so interesting. I should watch that. But yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like, you know, it takes a whole committee of people to, but it works. And I think that, you know, it's so important for people to have a support system of any kind to feel fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. Especially if it's like you can't get it from like your immediate family. Like I find it so interesting and actually amazing that your grandparents were able to work together for you to know each side of your family and understand like where you have that sense of coming from. But it's also interesting, like people need that family like system, whether you go out and create it yourself through friends or starting your own family or working within the confines of the family you're born into. But that is true. Like you need to have some sort of community and identity.
Yes. So.
Well, Sarah, we're going to shift into the final questions. Okay. I've actually really loved how our conversation has flowed. It's been really fun. I'm kind of like, do we have more time to talk about more woo-woo stuff? What I call woo-woo stuff. Well, maybe we'll do another episode or sometime on that together, talking about that more, about like angel energy and all that, what all goes into that and stuff. Where can everyone find you?
So my personal Instagram is at Sarah Ripp, the first three letters, my last name. And Angel Energy's Instagram is just angelenergy.social. So those are great places to find us. And both of the pages have our website in the bio. So that's how you can access the Angel Energy website. And we actually just added a new section to the website that is called Earth Angel Survival Stories. So I actually, the post I was telling you about when I initially did that blog post to tell my story, I actually posted that same piece on there just to get the conversation started. And then people can write either anonymously or, you know, with their name if they wanted to, just to really build that community on our website as well. And for people to be able to read other stories and realize that they're not alone. So that's on there too. But both are in the bios of each of my Instagram. So.
Mm-hmm. Good old Instagram.
Good old Instagram.
What's a book, resource, podcast, or something that has created a lot of value in your life that you would share with the audience?
So definitely the book I mentioned earlier, The Journey Home. I think that's important. I think also just depending on like what you want to do. So like when I first started blogging, I started listening to the influencer podcast, and like that's great for any like entrepreneur that just wants to figure out how to do like branding and stuff. So I'd recommend that. And then anything written by Lee Carroll, who's the person that wrote the book, The Journey Home, for as far as like spiritual, those are, I would start there for sure.
It's a good place to start. Yeah. Okay. Sarah, what would you say has been your bravest moment so far?
So my bravest moment probably was the first time I spoke and told my story in front of people, because it wasn't something that I've done. And since then, I feel like all the moments and all the speeches have been, you know, equally that same feeling of just putting myself out there and doing it. But I'm excited to see what the future holds. Maybe one day I'll be speaking in a different country and that will be my brave moment. But for now, it's school.
Yeah, traveling right now outside the country. Yeah, now I'm getting an itch. I'm kind of like, no, we'll just wait.
Maybe a few years, but yeah.
All right. And for our final question, what is your definition of brave?
My definition of brave is stepping into who you are and not caring what anybody thinks about that. I think letting go of the idea of like pleasing others and, you know, just being judged and letting that get in the way is really hindering to being brave. So just being brave is just stepping into your true self and not caring and just embracing you.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Sarah. Like I said, I loved having our conversation today.
Me too. We should definitely chat again. It was a lot of fun.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Built Brave. If you love this episode, heck, if you like this episode, please head on over, give it a rate, review, subscribe, like, shout it out on your social media with your major takeaways and what you loved about the episode. And as always, tag me in that at Lo Wentworth, because I love hearing what you guys got out of the episodes. And until next time, remember, you've always been brave.